We're back. We're better than ever. If you're listening to this episode, that means Simon and I successfully made it outside of exam week.
Yes, Simon? Barely, so but yes, I'm alive.
Cold week for myself. I'm perfectly back to normal now. And I thought I never would be.
True.
Yo, like with COVID these days, you literally don't know. So I'm just glad I made not a full recovery, but I'm like 99% of the way there now. So
yeah, that's all that matters.
Man, I'm so happy. Friday, December 17th, we're recording this now. We're a week away from Christmas, 2 weeks left of the year.
Eight days till Christmas.
And then soon enough, it'll be 2022. Hopefully, it's a new year instead of 2020 part two.
No chance. There's no chance. There's no chance. There's no chance. Tanya, right now.
Look, there's a lot of depression going on in COVID world.
Anxiety.
Right, and lots of anxiety depression. For good reason as well. And so we're going to take this episode to, well, actually, we treat this podcast as kind of like a getaway. So if anyone listening to this right now,
even though as of the last little bit, it hasn't really been a getaway. It's more been like more venting, rage, take your pick.
More venting, more rage. But still, it's a getaway from, I would much rather vent over here than deal with COVID and the politics of the outside world.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real. We talk about the NHL a couple times a week.
Factual.
There are much worse things, much more sad things that we could be talking about.
Also true.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we took this on. So anyone listening to this right now, happy holidays. Holidays are beginning for a lot of people now. So cozy up by the fireplace, turn on your Taxi Squad pod and get ready.
Get a nice cup of hot cocoa, get some whipped cream. Ooh,
marshmallows as well.
For those of you who are doing that, I'm very jealous of you. I don't have a beverage today, so I'm thirsty, but that's okay.
Yeah, I just got my tall glass? Bottle.
Water bottle. Tall bottle, yeah.
Tall bottle of water over here. Anyway,
today
we're going to talk about A Tale of Three Coaches, which is funny because last episode we talked about A Tale of Four Goalies. This episode is going to be fully dedicated to coaches. And so I am glad that the Paul Maurice thing happened today. Obviously, I am glad in the sense that we were going to talk about goalies this episode anyway. Sorry, coaches this episode.
Coaches. Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that a few hours ago today, Paul Maurice stepped aside from the Winnipeg Jets. So now we have like a perfect bundle of things to talk about today. And we can wrap it up all nicely with a bow. Because I'm going to start the tale of three goalies in reverse chronological order. So I'm going to start with the Jets. Then we're going to talk about Philadelphia. And then we're going to talk about Travis Green, Jim Benning, and the Vancouver Canucks.
Yep.
All right, so let's start with Paul Maurice. Just today, Paul Maurice stepped aside.
Yep.
And this was stunning. No one knew that this would be coming.
Complete surprise.
Mm-hmm. Took the world by surprise. And everyone was looking at the Jets like, oh, okay, well, what's the record? Well, the record is 13-10-5, 31 points overall, 3 points back of a playoff spot from Edmonton, which has 34 points in the Western Conference. Wow. So they are middle of the pack. They're about a 500 team, let's say. And typically at this time of the year, you don't really see a lot of coaches being fired for teams that have middling records. If teams have middling records and their coaches are fired, that usually happens sometime in January, February-ish, just to light some fire to see if the team can go on like a miraculous run or something. I think that happened with St. Louis when they fired Mike Yeo, right?
Yeah, except at that point, Mike Yeo was at the bottom of the league. They were literally dead last.
Yeah.
So like it was literally just to move on. Also, just to point something out. So Paul Maurice actually wasn't fired. He actually resigned.
Yes.
It was a mutual resignation. So it's not necessarily that he got fired. It was more so that he actually wanted to step away, which I'm sure we'll get to why shortly. But yes, sorry, go on.
Yeah, sorry if I mixed the two things up there. But yes, he stepped away. He resigned. So in the press conference that he had today, he basically after the news came out, he came up to the podium and then he talked with reporters for a couple hours or so. And tidbits of information that we were able to collect from that was, so number one, he's stepping aside purely for his own decision based off of what he perceived his value to the team to be. So he looked at the team and was like, okay, this is a good team, but he's been coaching there now for a number of years. And he thought that his voice no longer resonated with the players, and that the players in the locker room, they're good and they're capable of being a good playoff team, but he felt that his voice was no longer as important over there, and that the locker room needed a new voice in there to change things up. I'm going to bring up Paul Maurice's record. Do you know when he started coaching in the National Hockey League?
I actually have his Wikipedia page up in front of me, so I didn't know. So,
yeah. Okay. So started coaching in 95-96 for the Hartford Whalers. That is crazy.
Yeah.
I did not know Paul Maurice started that young. And he's been coaching ever since then. He went from Hartford, which then became Carolina, and then Carolina from Toronto. From Carolina, he went to Toronto in 06-07 and in 07-08. Love those seasons. Then he went back to Carolina until 11-12. And then
11-12.
Winnipeg from 13-14 all the way till now. So his tenure as the Winnipeg Jets head coach has been the longest in his professional coaching career. His total record.
Well, like, that's right. Yeah. Like, I guess I think it'd be Carolina if you combine his two stints together, but I guess like it's the longest consecutive years of coaching with one team. But yeah, sorry, go
ahead. Exactly. His total record is 1,684 games coached, 775 wins, 680 losses, 99 ties. Jesus. Hold on, am I reading this? 99 ties and 130 overtime losses. So, guys, that's how long you've been coaching, folks.
Yeah. So 762 wins, 670 losses, 99 ties, 125 overtime losses.
Okay, I'm looking at hockeyreference.com, so my numbers might be a little different than your Wikipedia ones.
Yeah, I'm looking at Wikipedia, so I don't know which one's accurate, but just the gist of it, he has like about like 750 wins, like almost 670 losses, about 100 ties, and about 130 overtime losses, 125 overtime losses. Take your pick.
Yeah, and with Winnipeg alone, he had 600 games played, 315 wins, 223 losses, and 62 overtime losses. We'll just go with Hockey Reference for now. So his record on the Winnipeg Jets was actually the most successful if you just look at points percentage, 577. And so his term as the Winnipeg Jets head coach was successful. It was very successful. What happened to them? At one point, they made the Western Conference Finals. I remember that. I remember that big whiteout spectacle that they had going on. And they've been a consistent playoff team, aside for a couple seasons here and there, throughout the last 7-8 seasons. And so what more could you expect from Paul Maurice? Everyone seemed to love him. He seemed to be a great player coach in the sense that he always seemed to protect his players from the media in case the media ever asked any questions about Blake Wheeler or the relationship in the locker room with Dustin Bufflin or whatever. Paul Maurice would always come up to bat for his players. He'd always be like, look at me first. Like, problems on me. I should focus on mending the bond in the room. So that's the type of coach he was.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say anything or do you want me to jump into?
You can keep going. I'll summarize my thoughts at the end because I don't have a whole lot to say, but yeah, go ahead.
So in the press conference here, reiterated,
yeah.
It's a tough word, man. That the players haven't quit on him. They're a good bunch of men. The relationship is strong with all of them, and that he's cheering for them. But when you have a 26-year-old, so this is his words now, when you have a 26-year-old professional hockey coaching career, you know, they need a new voice. They need someone to help them get to that next place. It doesn't necessarily need a more experienced, more talented guy. It just needs to be a different voice. And he thinks right now is the time to do it. And the analogy he used was, it's like rolling a boulder up a big mountain. There's only so far you can get until you get tired and you realize exhaustion kicks in and you cannot do this anymore. You need someone else to come in.
Yep.
And so a reporter later asked him, are you sure there wasn't any like recent thing that happened that maybe fueled your desire to step away? And he said, no, like going into the bubble to the lockout year, that was something he specifically didn't enjoy at all. And that was his words, that the first time in his career that he did not enjoy coming to the rink. And honestly, I feel for him. Like that, those couple seasons, even this one to an extent, is tough. The world is going through a shit time right now. And anyone having to deal with that, especially in the NHL, I can see why you would not like your job at that point in time.
Yeah.
He said that he's loved being the coach of the Jets through and through. And yeah, he basically stepped away just because he thought it was time. Regarding whether or not he's going to come back and coach again, he said, as of right now, like if you were to ask me today, he would say no, because he wants to regain his love for the sport again. He needs some time. In the meantime, however, I think his name is Dave Lowry, right?
Yep, Dave Lowry. Father of Adam Lowry, Winnipeg Jets player.
Oh, is he really the father?
Yep.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Assistant Wild. Coach Dave Lowry will be the interim coach for the remainder of the season. Kevin Cheveldayoff announced.
Yeah.
So that's Paul Maurice. You can share your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So looking back at Paul Maurice's, so Paul Maurice is basically like he's the second coach of this rendition of the Winnipeg Jets franchise. Claude Noel was the guy who was initially brought in 2011 and 12. But I think he got fired. I think it was just after the lockout season. But Paul Maurice has been the second head coach of this team. The second head coach of this team. I'm not including the old Winnipeg Jets that relocated to Arizona. But for this current rendition, he's basically like, there's not much competition there, except he's been the most successful coach there since the team left. I'm struggling to put the thoughts on paper because like you said, this is just such a complete, this was a complete shock. Like a week ago, like 2 weeks ago, everything surrounding the Jets is obviously about them beating the Leafs, but he was a successful coach. I mean, relatively speaking, in terms of the regular season success, you can debate how successful he was in the playoffs, considering they've only made it past the second round once, which is when they went to the Eastern Conference Final against the Vegas Golden Knights. So since he started coaching the Winnipeg Jets, he was there for 8 seasons, which is still a lot. He made the playoffs in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He made the playoffs in 5 of them. That's over half of them. And so again, this comes back to a concept that we've talked about a bit in terms of like what do you consider successful in terms of like regular season and postseason success. I really do think Paul Maurice is a really good coach. I think that there were times where the Winnipeg Jets weren't a good team on paper, but he still made them a lot better than they looked. And again, I think the important thing we need to talk about here is not necessarily that I think he's right. I do think that this Winnipeg Jets team is a good team. I think they're better than what the record reflects right now. Because I do believe, I think if you include overtime losses, they're I think 2 games under 500. If you include overtime losses as regular losses, which is something that I do. But anyways,
yeah.
But I think the thing like a lot of people right now, I think it's just kind of showing that the pandemic is taking took a massive toll on Paul Maurice. I think it is part of the reason why he no longer, well, he, as he said in his post, in his press conference when he announced it, that I think he said he's losing love for the game. And it's not necessarily the league's fault. I just think with the bubble and with the current protocols, I think Paul Maurice has coached quite a bit. I think he has quite enough money. If he's not happy doing his job and he doesn't feel like he can, like you said, and he doesn't think he can actually help the team, this makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. I guess I'm just surprised that he decided to actually act on it and actually resign now, as opposed to waiting till the end of the regular season, or at the end of the season rather.
Can I say one thing here?
Yep.
The fact that he stepped aside from his job, I find it very, very noble. And I find that something very, very few leaders actually do today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to specifically point at Gary Bettman. Maybe I'm extrapolating here, and maybe I'm making this a way bigger thing than it needs to be. But this guy has stepped aside finally for the first time in his 26th coaching career, saying that, okay, after 8 seasons with the Winnipeg Jets, I think my voice is no longer being heard. My voice in the locker room is being distant, and they need a new person there now to shake things up, to lead them to the promised land and whatever.
Yeah.
Gary Bettman has been there for nearly 30 years. Has the thought never crossed your mind, Gary, that maybe a change is good for the league? Why would any leader in their right mind think them staying at the helm of their company, organization, whatever team, is good for that long? Your thoughts are outdated. Yeah. You're a dinosaur. If you know that yourself, then only you're a good leader. The fact that that hasn't even crossed his mind yet, probably. And that's why he's still a commissioner of the league. Yeah. Just shows you what kind of person.
I get where you're coming from. I don't, in this current situation, I don't necessarily think it's that black or white. And the reason I say that is because I think if there's anything that we can take away from the Paul Maurice press conference, I think it's just there's so many things at work there. And it's not necessarily just like my voice isn't, they're not like they need a new voice. I mean, I think it's definitely a part of it. But I also, from everything I've read, from everything I've heard, from everything I've watched in terms of the Paul Maurice press conference, I don't think that that was necessarily a driving factor. Again, I think we talked about the start of the show, like about using this as an escape. I think especially right now with the Omicron variant, with what we're seeing around a lot of different sports leagues, with an insane, like not even crazy, an insane amount of players being put into COVID protocol. I think this is a very, very sensitive time. I don't think the fact that this is right, like that this resignation is right beside the holidays is a coincidence. Because again, players who are currently testing positive might not even be able to go home and spend time with their families. That's something that people aren't really talking about, or at least doesn't feel like people are talking about. So in the grand scheme of things, I 100% think you're right. I 100% think that, maybe Gary Bettman should take that approach as well. But I also don't think, I feel like we should be, if we're going to try to link the two, that we should at least kind of put more emphasis on the fact. I don't think that was necessarily a huge driving factor of the Paul Maurice decision.
Fine.
Because even if he did think that the team needed a new voice, I think that the fact that just with the variant right now, with COVID right now, it kind of made Paul Maurice a lot more comfortable to do it now. Hmm. Because again, the team's no better off with Dave Lowry now than they would have been with Paul Maurice the rest of the season, at least in my opinion.
Okay, fair enough. I agree with you there then. I agree with you there. Yeah. I think, okay, in terms of just a pure leadership perspective, I have my takeaway. COVID-wise, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
In terms of the point you brought up, I 100% agree with that. I just think it's kind of, I don't want to say wrong, but I think the two are a bit incompatible just given what we know or what was said at the press conference. That's all. That's all I'm saying. But in terms of the big picture, we're on the same page.
Yeah, I'm also seeing Spider-Man tonight. And so I myself, I'm a little worried about seeing that movie. Like, I don't even know if I should be seeing that, but I'm gonna go. I'm also getting my booster shot really soon. I think we all are.
I got it 2 days ago.
Okay, good for you.
Yeah,
lucky.
I'm
gonna get mine soon. I think everyone will as well. So definitely get that as soon as you can.
Please get your booster. Please. Like, I'm so sick of this shit,
bro. We're going to go through the same thing again like we went through with dose one and dose two.
Yeah.
Begging everyone to take it. But man, like, we had some sense of normalcy over the last few months, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that great? Wasn't that amazing the last few months? Like, since June, July onwards till December?
I just wish I took advantage of it.
I wish you took more advantage of it, but like, this is something we want. Why would you want to give it away? Get your booster. Come on.
Yeah. And again, like, I think if there's one, we're not a super we're not a vaccine podcast. We're not a health science podcast. But like, one thing I'm going to say is I'm trying to be optimistic here, just because like, even like when I heard about seating capacity restraints being put back into place for the NHL and like everything like that, like, it's just, I think it's natural to get anxiety, but I'm choosing to try to be optimistic. And I do think it's a really good sign that although the numbers of people getting infected are going up. The rate of hospitalizations is way down, and I think that is a okay. very good thing.
That is very good.
That is, yeah.
The one thing I'm going to go complete 180 on is I think what I said last episode, and that was the NHL players going to the Olympics. Yeah, no, that's not happening.
I called it. I don't think that's happening. I literally prophesized that, and then like 2 days later, like everyone guy went on the COVID protocol. I was like, I am right. Like,
yeah. I put a tweet about it 2 days later, saying, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, like again, could they go? I mean, it's in February. They could. I'd be curious to know if there's a clause in their decision if they can pull out last minute. I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, the last day is January 8th, I think, for them to make the final decision.
I can't see them, especially because now I think we're getting into a place now. Actually, I'm gonna throw my hot take in here. I think once the holiday break hits, I think there's a real chance that the NHL is gonna put a pause on the season.
Yeah.
I have no reason to think. I haven't read anything, but like the fact that like when I said that there's like a crazy amount of players like going on to COVID IL, it's not even like the number of players, it's who. Like these are like players who are like regulars in the lineup who will play like a significant amount of time in the lineup for the respective team are being put on the IL. And like if that's the case, like if you're gonna have fans paying for that product, like I think you owe it to them to either A, allow like change it and allow an actual and bring back the taxi squad or actually pause or because if everyone's gonna be home for the holidays, which they will be unless you're isolating, I think that's a perfect time to kind of let them have like a week to 2 weeks off, kind of regroup, get everything together, and then kind of resume. And then at that point, just don't go to the Olympics and then take the time you had for the Olympic break and just make up the game that you're missing, or then make up the games that you're going to be canceling in that whatever break you take. I think at this point that makes the most sense. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know. I know it's not that black and white because the league is a business, but I don't know what else they're going to do.
It's a sticky situation, but I stand with you there on your thoughts and your predictions. I think you're spot on. I think that's exactly what might happen as well. Okay. Let's jump to coach number two. Philadelphia Flyers, Alain Vigneault. He was fired on December 6th. So this was about 11 days ago now. And so, excuse me. Sorry, I had to clear my throat there. But he was fired Monday, December 6th after the Philadelphia Flyers lost 6 games in a row. I'm going to say their record first. So at that point in time, they were 8-10-4 and 7th place in the Metro. Since firing Vigneault, they are 3-2-1 and now they are 11-12-5 overall. Right now, they're 11th place out of 16 teams in the Eastern Conference. I believe they haven't really moved up or down since firing him. They're basically the same thing. Right now they have 27 points. They're 4 points out of a wild card spot behind Detroit, which has 31 points. Go Detroit. Wow. By the way, that Detroit team is amazing. Philly.
My favorite non-Canadian team. Yeah.
As of right now.
Detroit. I fucking love Detroit. I think they're going to be unbelievable in the next couple of years. Like, they look so good. But sorry, go ahead. Next.
I agree with you there. Philadelphia is just kind of middling now. So, another team similar to Winnipeg in that they are about a 500 team, only 3-4 points behind a playoff spot, right? So, the feeling around the Philadelphia Flyers, however, is completely different. This happened after they lost 8 games in a row. And we're just too shy of matching a team record 10 in a row when he was fired. And since then, let me pull up the record. So he was fired December 6th. Well, actually, I'm going to go back on that. They matched the team high record of 10 losses in a row because Monday, December 6th, they lost 7-5 against the Avalanche. And then they lost 3-0 on Wednesday, December 8th against the Devils. So that was a 10-game losing streak.
Interesting.
They then won 4-3 against the Golden Knights, 5-3 against the Coyotes, 6-1 against the Devils, and then they just lost 2-3 to the Canadiens yesterday in a shootout. So all those things aside, garbage team. Like, that's the best way I could describe it. This was a tire fire of a season, and it looks like they may climb out of it. Who knows? They're only 3-4 points behind out of a playoff spot. But at the same time, like, the general ire, I don't know if ire is the right word here, the aura around this team is just hugely underwhelming performances. They are well under the bridge of what everyone expected to be them to be in terms of their, like, performance and results this season. And that was me included. I had them firmly in a playoff spot as well. I'm getting a call from someone. Sorry about that. And yeah. So I'm going to pull up some things about the Flyers quickly. Do you have anything to say first?
I think this team's in trouble. That's all I really got. I'll go on my tangent. It's not a tangent, but like, the Philadelphia Flyers are in a position where they need to make a decision. They need to decide what they're going to be. But if you just looking at their cap friendly right now, I think I know what their decision has to be. Like, this is a team that went to the Stanley Cup final 2010 and lost the Chicago Blackhawks. And after that, I think they made the playoffs like relatively consistently. I think above like the average team in the league would. Like they made it in 11-12. They made it in 12-13, I think, or if not the year after. But anyways, like, this is a team that used to be like the Broad Street Bullies, and they had like Scott Hartnell, Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, Claude Giroux still there. Like Chris Pronger, Kimmo Timonen, and like for a while, this was a really good team. I think there's something to be said that they've been relatively competitive, like ever since that core was there. That like they've never really been in a full on rebuild. I mean, they've had seasons where they've been bad, but it's getting to the point now where like I think they should like really consider like tearing it down, like, or like, because let me quickly run you through the cap friendly thing, because here's what I see. Claude Giroux is a free agent at the end of the year. Could he resign? Maybe. If I'm the Flyers, I try to trade him at the deadline. Kevin Hayes is making $7 million until the sun explodes in 2025, 2026. JVR has a year left after this year, $7 million. Like, I think they're going to have trouble moving that contract. Atkinson's at 5'8", nearly $6 million for another 4 years. Travis Konecny's at 5.5 for 4 years. That's a really nice player, though. I really like Travis Konecny. Sean Couturier is on an absolute... Actually, never mind. I take that back. He's making 7.7 next year. He's making 4 right now. But like, my point here is like, the top players on their team aren't like, they're not young like studs, and I don't think they're players that are gonna help you compete. And I know this is supposed to be an Ella and Vino thing, which again we can talk about that shortly. But I just think the Flyers as a whole, I think we talked about this recently, like, I just think there's only really one direction for them to go, assuming they're like serious about contending for a Stanley Cup or for a championship.
Yeah, I think we touched briefly upon the Philadelphia Flyers in the last episode as well. So I think we talked about like JVR and the performances their players are putting in.
I think we talked about Martin Jones last year. Yes. Our last episode. I think we talked about Martin Jones. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or so last ride, rather. Yeah.
Yeah. So we won't go too into too much detail around the Philadelphia Flyers team, but I'm going to bring it back to Alain Vigneault. Do you know when he started coaching? I have his record up as well. Do you have his record up as well?
I don't have it up.
Don't.
When he started coaching?
Yeah.
Like when he actually started coaching, or when he started coaching the Flyers?
When he started coaching in general, like what season do you think it was?
Man, it's going to be a while, because I know he coached the Canucks in 2010, 2011. Also like 06, 07 or something like that.
97,
98. I know, what right? What the fuck? All right, cool.
97, 98, he coached the Montreal Canadiens.
Fuck? That's what I knew he coached the fucking Canadiens. That's what, oh my God. Okay, true.
So he coached four straight seasons of Montreal back then. Then he had a 5-year break between 01 and 06. So you were right in 06, 07.
Oh, fuck. True. Okay, it's not bad. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's good. So Vancouver, 06, 07, all the way to 12-13, and then New York 13-14 till the end of 17-18, and then Philadelphia for the last two seasons and like 23 games.
Yeah.
And so his overall record, 1364 games played, 722 wins, 490 losses, 35 ties, 117 overtime losses, good for 585 points percentage. Wow, he has won a shit ton of games.
Yeah, I carried on the back of those Vancouver Canucks teams, but yeah.
Yeah, 632 win percentage in Vancouver.
I'm looking at the finish here, like first year, first Northwest, second year, fifth. And then like first. He was unbelievable. He had unbelievable Canucks teams. And the Rangers did well too. Second in the Metro, first in the Metro, third in the Metro.
He's gone to the Stanley Cup Finals twice, once with Vancouver and then once with the New York Rangers. Never had a cup. Philadelphia, he had overall 74 wins, 55 losses, and then 19 overtime losses. So he's a great head coach, but he's a dinosaur. Like, he's a dinosaur.
Yep.
And well, I guess that old. The same can be said about Paul Maurice. He also started in 95, 96 with Hartford, but Paul Maurice is just different. Like, when you look at the interviews that they have with, and you just put them side by side to each other, you can tell Paul Maurice gets it. Like, he's a modern type of coach, and the systems he employs just seem more modern. Ali Vigneault has been kind of stuck on the philosophy that he's employed with Vancouver in 06, 07 up till now. There's a specific style that he plays, and it seems that he's unwavering.
Yeah, like, with my thing with Ali Vigneault, and I guess to some extent maybe Paul Maurice, but not really, like, I think one thing that needs to be said in terms of the result is like, it is kind of difficult to really evaluate, like, how good a coach is, because I look at Ali Vigneault's record right now, and, like, part of the thing I said about, like, oh, he's, like, his win percentage, point percentage is so high. He was basically coaching a like President's Trophy Vancouver Canucks team for like 5 years. Of course he's gonna do well. And then like when he went to New York, he also took on a New York Rangers team that won. I think they either won the President's Trophy or like they were the number one seed in the East like 2 years ago before John Tortorella left. So like, granted, I don't think if there's one thing I can take away, again, Kevin BX swears by him, so I guess I'll take that with some grain of salt, because I actually do really like Kevin BX as an analyst, but like, I'm not convinced that Ali Vigneault is actually a really good coach, just based off the fact is like, I think he's just been very lucky, and he's basically took on some really talented teams, because like the thing is like, you hear people like talk about in Mike Babcock in his prime, or not in his prime, but like when he was with like the Red Wings, when he was like the Leafs, I like to use the last place Leafs season as a really good example of this. People call like Mike Babcock like one of the best coaches like of all time, and people talk about that Leafs last place season, like they looked really good, they looked like a really good team, like they were competitive. Their systems are really good. Like, their players are working really hard. Like, the people were buying in. Ali Vigneault, like, basically, like, Mike Babcock, like, people acknowledge it. Like, he makes good bad teams better. Like, he made that Leafs, that horrible last place Leaf team better. Yes. I don't get that vibe with it. I don't.
Say what you want about Mike Babcock, but like his culture and the way he treated his players, whatever. He was good for the team at the time. And he helped change the culture. He was a good stepping stone. Sheldon Keefe just made it better and continued what Mike Babcock already started. So that's one thing I have to say.
Mike Babcock, went at the time of his hire, was one of the most highly sought after head coaching hires of all time, like in the NHL. And he's still one of the most decorated head coaches of all time. Maybe not highly decorated, but like he's been extremely successful. Ali Vigneault, I don't get that vibe. Like, I'm sorry, like he's been successful, but he also doesn't strike me as a guy who's like, oh wow, like Ali Vigneault is a really good coach. Like, he's making this fly, like he's doing things on this Flyer team and they're making them better. Like, I've never seen that, and I think this season with the Flyers has shown that.
Sorry, I was on mute there for a sec, but yes,
you know.
I'm going to quickly read a couple things from Alain Vigneault's conference. I think Chuck Fletcher talked about it briefly. Right now he says, right now we've lost our way. The last 10, we slipped back. There's no question. Now the onus is on our group to get it back. When injured players come back, it makes it easier, but we can't kid ourselves. We have to get better. And then he basically talked about, so this is right after they lost, I believe they lost just before Vigneault was fired. They lost 7-1 against the Lightning. So that's how the Flyers were going. And Claude Giroux said, last night was not a good, was a good example that our game was not good enough and getting embarrassed in your own building. It is not acceptable. Yeah, that's what the Flyers have been going through. And you know what's even weirder? Next up is Mike Yeo to coach for them. And Mike Yeo tanked that St. Louis team into the ground that season before he was let go. And then the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup. So it's weird. Well, maybe Mike Yeo is better than his record indicates, but Mike Yeo, it's ironic how this is happening right now.
Yeah.
Team in a similar situation about midway through the season, and now Mike Yeo is coming in to maybe save the day. Who knows?
I don't think so. I think it's more so just to get the LA venue out of there. Because one thing I think needs to be brought up. One thing I think it's relevant is I think it was earlier in the season. Robin Lehner had a Twitter outburst a while ago, and he was talking about coaches or players telling athletes to take medication or whatever, or something like that. And the main point of Robin Lehner's tweet being like, Alain Vigneault's a sketchy dude, and kind of fits the mold of some of the things that we've touched on this podcast before, like old man's club, like super outdated stuff like that, which I could totally see. So from that perspective, I've kind of been waiting to see if anything like that comes out. But again, like since then, I've been waiting for this fire because again, like I just think the Flyers are in a situation now where like they're caught in a very awkward position where they don't have a lot of assets to trade, but they also don't have a lot of prospects to like actually help improve their team. So, yeah. I mean, like, yeah.
Which is possibly the worst situation any team could be in.
Yeah, like, the worst position you can be in is good, like, not good enough to contend and not bad enough to tank. And that's kind of where the Flyers are right now. But I think they are bad enough to tank. I think they just need to sell off some of their pieces.
Yep. So, that's
and
Philly.
It's kind of too bad, though, because they went and they got they got gifted. I mean gifted because they won the draft lottery and they drafted Nolan Patrick second overall and he didn't pan out. And they traded him and they ended up trading him in a three-way trade and got Ryan Ellis, who I think has played like three games this season. He's been hurt all year, which is something not...
Anyway. And that's on the Flyers.
The Flyers are a mess, man.
Ryan Ellis has been injured for a majority of the season. Like he's a glass man. And so that's on the Flyers, in my opinion, for doing that. That's hella. That's a weird move, man. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't know, like, yeah. Anyways. Mm-hmm.
That's the Flyers. Just one thing I want to reiterate there is, sorry, Mike Yeo is not permanent. He's an interim coach right now. So I take back that he's trying to save the day, but you never know. You never know. Flyers.
Are only I think Babs is coming back.
Oh, no. Are you serious for the Flyers?
I could see it, or I think he's gonna get a look somewhere. Like I don't like. I think times pass. Like again, like the thing is, like what he did. Like I don't want to get into a Mike Babcock thing. But, like what he did with Mitch Marner was wrong, for a multitude of reasons. But like, I also don't think it's bad enough to justify him not getting another coaching position in the NHL. Unless there's like other stuff that went on behind the scenes that I don't know about Mike Babcock, but like there's a lot of sketchy and shady stuff that has come out about him, which I don't necessarily agree with. Like for example, like the things the Mike Modano thing when Mike Modano was in Detroit, where like he was like he needed one game to hit like 4,000 games or something like that, and he healthy scratched him, but like
I don't think that's holding. It's a very shitty thing to do. I don't think that's holding him back from being a new coach. I think a lot of what's maybe preventing some teams from hiring Mike Babcock again is probably maybe the Mitch Marner thing and the Johan Franzen thing, which is worse than the Mitch Marner thing.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay, hold on. I need to refresh myself on the Johan Franzen thing.
I think we won't spend too much time on it, but basically it was he was like screwing him up around the mental aspects, verbally assaulting him.
But I just looked it up now. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then I think Johan Franzen had to go into therapy at one point, something like that, right?
Yeah, okay, never mind. I take that back. I completely forgot about that. I don't think we're gonna see him anytime soon. I mean, might.
I was like, where are you going with this?
Here's the thing. I'm trying to navigate this because, like, based on that, I don't think we should see him ever. We should see him in the league again. But there's also a league where they like where John Tortorella is like borderline. Like, it feels like John Tortorella is like that as well. And he was in the league for. Anyways, this is another discussion for another day. I don't know. Like, this is kind of. Where we're at with the league right now. I have no idea if that type of stuff even matters anymore, but like
one day we'll have a proper breakdown of our problems with the coaching culture around the league.
I don't want to talk about problems anymore, man. That's too many true.
Okay, fine. Then in that case, it's probably good that we're wrapping up the Canucks because a problem no more they are. I worded that really weirdly. A problem they are not anymore for their fans.
Yep.
They fired Jim Benning and Travis Green, so both the GM and the head coach, on December 5th.
Mm-hmm.
So this was exactly, it's about a week and a half ago, so 12 days. End of an era for Vancouver because Jim Benning was there for a long, long, long time. Travis Green was there for not so much long time, just 17, 18 up till now. Travis Green had a record of 133 wins, 147 losses, 34 overtime losses for 478. The team was bad under Travis Green. A lot of people did not like Travis Green, and that was not a good recipe right there. It's a recipe for disaster, if you ask me. Anyway, since firing both of them and hiring for the first time, Bruce Boudreau, what's the chant that all the Winnipeg fans, the Vancouver fans are saying?
Bruce, there it is. Bruce, there. Yeah. I love
and then that. Bruce Boudreau is like, I want you guys to stop saying that. Something like that.
That's funny.
Everyone loves Brucey. But right now they have won 6 straight games in a row after losing 4-1 against the Penguins on December 4th. They fired both of them, and then they won 4-0 against the Kings, 2-1 against the Bruins, 3-4 against the Jets, 2-1 against the Hurricanes, 3-4 against the Blue Jackets, and 5-2 against the Sharks. So a lot of close one goal games there, 4 in a row actually. So now this looks like a team who's winning playoff style. Now this looks like a team that's pretty good. Elias Pettersson has points in 3 straight games. He looks like he's finally finding a rhythm again. The Vancouver Canucks are right now 30 points in the league, 14 wins, 15 losses, 2 overtime losses, and they're just 4 points out of a wild card spot. Sorry.
Yep.
4 points out. 3 points out. 3 points out behind Winnipeg, who we just talked about.
Yep.
So, Winnipeg, Vancouver. Look at them. I'm going to let you go first because I know you want to talk about that.
So, Bruce Boudreau was hired on December 5th of 2021, which is a super nice day. It's kind of funny, and I'll break down my thought on this. December 7th at 12:59 p.m., I sent a text message. I said, "Mark my words, Bruce Boudreau was going to turn the Canucks around. I will die on that hill." So I called that, but not okay. Anyways, like here is my thought. So Bruce Boudreau's been kicking around for a while. Sorry, not kicking around, but he's been unemployed for, I think, a couple seasons now, maybe a season and a half. I'm not 100% sure. I'm pretty sure the last team he coached was the Minnesota Wild, who had a lot of good players. And, like, this is another guy who I look at Bruce Boudreau and I hear him talk and I hear him break stuff down. Like, he seems like a genuinely intelligent man. And like a very intelligent coach, and he knows what he wants to do. He has his plans, he has his systems, and everything works out. And this is a man who has coached Ovechkin, he's coached Backstrom, he's coached Carlson, he's coached more experienced players who used to be good, like Eric Staal, Zach Parise, Ryan Suter, if you want to talk about Suter in that sense. So, like, this guy's seen a lot of stuff. And, like, it's kind of funny because, like, leading up to the hiring, I was, like, watching and reading a lot of, like, watching, listening to, and, like, reading a lot of Bruce Boudreaux content, because he's someone that I wanted on, like, the Leafs assistant coaching staff, like, really, really badly, because he's a really good offensive mind. Like, he was a really good offensive player that actually played for the Leafs. He's from Toronto. Like he actually played for the Leafs. Like, he's a very intelligent man. He's very smart. Like, again, and, like, hearing him go through stuff made me think, how the hell is this guy not in the NHL? And actually, he did interview for the Leafs, for one of the Leafs assistant coaching positions, and apparently they didn't want to bring him on for reasons which I'm sure people can imagine, just in terms of having, like, basically having a head coach on your assistant coaching staff. But anyways, like, the one thing people were talking about was, like, this Canucks team is too good to be this bad. And, like, I think Bruce Boudreaux was, like, one of the most perfect fits, or was a perfect fit to get them out of this funk, just because he is, like, he's a player's coach. All of his players love him. And, like, man, like, the Canucks just needed a change. Like, I think they really just needed a change. But, like, granted, they do still have some flaws. They do still have some red flags on their roster, which I think they can go out and address at the deadline if they need to. But, like, man, I genuinely think that Bruce Boudreaux is probably going to end up being, like, well, number one, one of the best hires that we've seen, like, that we're going to see this season and in the offseason. And, like, man, I'm not counting the Canucks out of the playoffs at all, because even just looking at their roster, because they have Thatcher Demko, they don't even need to be, like, that good. They just need to be, like, good enough just so, like, they need to be just good enough to outscore their problems. But even Thatcher Demko, they need to score more goals than they allow. And when you have Thatcher Demko in that, that's going to happen more times than not. So I really like what the Canucks are doing right now. And I'm so happy that Bruce Boudreaux got back in the NHL and he's showing people why he deserves to be there.
You know what it is about the Canucks? When now the team is finally good, the aura around the team and around that city in general, what's up?
Sorry, I'm looking at the standings right now. I saw something very, very surprising, but go ahead.
Okay. The aura around the Vancouver Canucks is just so much lighter and just feels so much better. And that's coming from a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. Like, I just feel good for them now. I'm like, get your shit, Canucks. Feel good for you. Good job. You're finally, feels good that you have some change there and now you're moving toward the right direction. Good job. Keep it up.
The only thing I really like about the Canucks, though, is, like, their team. Like, I don't like the media. I don't like their fans. Like that, which is kind of typical, like, Toronto Maple Leaf stuff, which is fine. I get it. But, like I like so many of the players on this team, man. Like, I'm so happy that they're actually competing again. Because, like, and again, like, Bruce Boudreaux was a guy that, like, I was shocked he was unemployed for that long, because genuinely think, like, he's, like, actually one of the best coaches in the NHL. I still believe that. I believe that for a while. Just seeing what he did, like seeing what he did in Anaheim. Oh, I completely forgot he coached in Anaheim. He had Ryan Getzlaf and Corey Perry back. Like, oh my God, this guy's seen shit, bro. Like, yeah, like, anyways, I'm such a big Bruce Boudreaux fan, though. Oh my God.
Bruce Boudreaux doesn't have a shelf life, as do all NHL head coaches, but you can see why he was a good fit in Vancouver, and the record, at least for the first six games, indicates that he is a good fit, and he was just the person that they needed to light the fire under the team and get them going again. The team was way too good for them to be performing the way they were, and so I'm just glad for the city of Vancouver that they finally have something to talk about that's positive. I think they were also, Vancouver and the BC area was going through a lot of flooding recently. I don't want to talk about like the Vancouver Canucks maybe being a beacon of hope or anything. I saw a couple things around that, but, like, it's good. It's good for the city, right? Something to talk about. That's good.
Well, yeah, like, again, I don't want to make this comparison, because, like, again, like, with stuff like this, it's so difficult to make comparisons like this. But, like, the year that the Boston Marathon bombings happened, was, like, well, number one, it was awful. It was horrible. Like, again, like, that's, like, it was shitty. Like, there's no other way for me to put it. Like, it was an act of terrorism. It was awful. And, like, there's, like, I don't think people who live in Boston, there's probably a good chance that they still haven't fully recovered from that, though. But they also had the Boston Red Sox. They won the World Series that year. I think the Boston Bruins went to the Stanley Cup final against the Blackhawks that year. Like, people don't talk about this a lot. Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, especially nowadays with COVID and like natural disasters, like hurricanes, tornadoes, and everything like that. Like, sports is good for one of the things that sports is really good for, that acts as an escape.
Yeah.
And the Canucks have their escape right now. Sorry, not the Vancouver has their escape right now, and the Canucks, or they can choose to use them as an escape because they're fun to watch right now. So, hey.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm going to quickly talk about Jim Benning. This is the depressing part of this whole story. Jim Benning, for GMs that have been coaching for at least 7+ years in the NHL, where do you think he ranks in terms of points percentage? Like, there is, should I count this? 37 GMs. Where do you think he ranks?
Sorry, in that period. Sorry, in that period. Okay. So,
where do you think he ranks of 37 GMs that have coached, that have been GM for at least 7 or more years in the NHL?
Third last.
Wow. How the hell did you know
that? Are you sure? I was like,
yeah, that's
crazy. So I thought it was going to be last. I was like,
well, let's wrap up here. Thanks everyone for listening.
Let's go.
493 percentage for points. The only two GMs, I hate so you. Bad. The only two GMs worse than him were Mike Milbury, New York Islanders, 11 straight seasons, and then Doug McClain, seven seasons on the Columbus Blue Jackets.
No, are you serious?
Yes. Yes, Doug McClain had a 413 points percentage. Mike Milbury had 438. Bad? Jim Benning had 493.
Shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Okay, that's like that. Okay, that is like the fact that he's in front only in front of those two is a genuine shock to me. Yep. I thought he would have been higher up, but that's crazy. Like, oh yep. My god.
Best he ever did was a second round playoff berth with the Vancouver Canucks. I'm going to say a quick thing. I got this chart from vancouveriswesome.com. Author Daniel Wagner. I'll put a link in the description for this. Great article, by the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was surprising to see someone last in that position for as long as he did, considering how bad he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I know 100%. The GM doesn't play on the ice. I know the GM doesn't have the stick in his hand, but he's responsible for the moves, for the acquisitions, for the drafting and whatever for the Vancouver Canucks. He's the person who facilitates the points percentage, right? He draws the chessboard for the Vancouver Canucks so that the coach can move the pieces around. It's a weird analogy, but just go with it for now.
Yep.
And so seeing him last for 7+ years was agonizing to watch.
Yep.
Like, they needed some goddamn change. And so I'm so glad now that they have an even older dinosaur in Jim Rutherford leading their president.
Position. Yeah, well, like Jim Rutherford's actually good at his job. Like, yes. I'm just looking back at the Vancouver Canuck rosters. Like I look at the 1920 roster. I'm looking at it right now. It was actually a pretty good team. Like Berchi, Bailey, Beagle, Besser, Erickson, Ferland, Gaudette, Goldobin, Grayovac, Horvat, Levo, Miller, like Pettersson. Like they had some really good players on that team. Like, but then you go from 1920 to 2021 and woof, it was bad. Oh my God. Like, so Bailey Beagle, same as the year before. Besser, good player. Travis Boyd, claimed off of waivers. That's a genuinely nice pickup. I like Travis Boyd a lot. Louis Erickson, probably one of the worst free agent signing contracts like of the decade. Gadjevich, I don't know who that is. Gaudette was a pretty good player. I'm pretty sure that they traded him because he caused that outbreak in the Canucks locker room last year.
Yeah, or
at least that was the rumor. Yeah. So, anyways, like, nice player though, but like, I get why you move him. Harlech, Highmore, Hoglander is a good player. Horvat, then Lind, Lockwood, McEwen, Michaelis, JT Miller is good. Tyler Mott, Pearson, Pettersson, Roussel, Suter, VC, Virtanen. Like, what is that, man? Mm-hmm. Like you have your core players, but like, dude, everything else around them is just not garbage, but like, just, it's just subcutaneous fat. Like, it's just you don't need that shit, bro. That's the difference between like a team like them and a team like a Washington or a Pittsburgh in its prime, or an Avalanche, where like, they genuinely have so much depth on that team, and like, I'm like, it's not really that much better this year. I think Hunter Garland and OEL were really two really nice pickups, but like OEL with a little asterisk because they're paying him until like this again, until like the sun explodes. But like, I don't know, man. Like, I think they have a nice little team here, I think. Will they be able to keep it up? I don't think they're obviously not going to go undefeated the rest of the year, but I think it's just like managing the ups and downs. And I think Bruce Boudreaux is one of the best people you can have to help help manage that. Cause like one thing that this team, I think, going to be battling the rest of the year is just confidence and just staying level and not getting too low when you lose and not getting too high when you win. Cause I think right now, or at least it was recently until Bruce Boudreaux took over, I think that's a very, I think it's going to be in a very emotional locker room, just given all the shit that they've been through.
Yep. Yep. Sorry, I got a little sidetracked there. Someone needs me. Canucks are, they were an enigma going into this season. And well, we knew what they were in terms of performance, but I'm really glad now for what the team and the direction that they're headed in. I'm going to quickly talk about the two new additions to the team before we wrap up here. Bruce Boudreaux, he's had a ton of experience. We already talked about this, but two-year deal and only worth $2 million for this season and $2.5 million for next season, which is a huge bargain considering who he is.
That's still,
And then Jim Rutherford was hired shortly after, December 13th or December 12th, I think. And then he's not the GM. He's the president of hockey operations on the Vancouver Canucks now. And he is currently looking for a GM. So if you're listening to this podcast and you would like to be the GM of the Vancouver Canucks, the applications are currently being accepted.
Sign me up. I'll do it.
I heard a rumor about Marc Bergevin being considered. My God, I hope he does not. But I think it'd be
funny, but no, I don't think he will.
I have faith. Good job, Canucks.
Like, I think it's going to be interesting because I think there's a lot of guys that I think would be a really nice fit in that role. I mean, obviously, that's kind of like there's a lot of people right now out there. I mean, I've heard Mark Hunter's name thrown around a lot. I don't know how much I like that. I don't know. I think it's going to be really, really, really interesting next couple of weeks. Not next couple of weeks because I don't think that, like, because the whole reason they brought in Jim Rutherford is they wanted to bring someone in and have Jim Rutherford basically like mentor him and like teach him basically like the Lou Lamoriello role that that the Leafs had with Kyle Dubas when in 2016, 2017 before Lou went to the Islanders. So like, and it's kind of too bad because I think in hindsight, if I think the Canucks probably would have really liked to have Jeff Gordon if they acted sooner. I think that was a really nice hire. But hey, I mean, the Canucks will be fine. But I do think that they need to act quickly just to prevent something like this happening again. But I don't really know who they would really want. Now, part of that's because I don't really know like which GMs recently fired or anything. But like, it seems like the ones that are like the hot topic ones are kind of hot ticket ones are kind of currently employed.
Yep. Okay, so let's wrap there. Good job, Canucks. Bad job, Flyers, and good job, Jets.
Medium. Hold on. Before we cut it, hold on. I'm currently looking at an article called Best Available GMs for the New Seattle Franchise. So we're going to quickly do this. McCrimmon, Gillis, Hextall. Yeah, I like Hextall. Hextall, actually, no. He's too old. Drew, never mind. Kyle Dubas. There you go.
No.
Here's your answer.
Lou Lamoriello.
I like Kyle.
You have to pry him from the Islanders. He's with his cold dead hands.
Damn, who's gonna be the new GM? Like, he's bothering me now. Oh my goodness. Actually, watch the Sedins do it. That'd be crazy.
Oh no, that's not happening yet. No chance. Not yet.
Kevin Bieksa. Go.
Funny.
Brian Kessler. Oh, actually, do you think Roberto Luongo would do it?
No, not yet. Who else? I could totally see him being a coach or GM one day, but not yet.
Dan Hamhuis. I'm thinking of players from that 2010, 2011 Canucks team. Max Lapierre, Alex Burrows.
Ooh.
Anyways, Higgins, Chris Higgins. Is that a player? Chris Higgins. Yeah, Chris Higgins. Oh, I like him. I love that Canucks team. That was a team I actually like was following during that playoff run in 2010, 2011. Like not even like,
yeah,
just instinctively, because like, I think they were the only Canadian team in the playoffs that year. Like, okay, I'll let you, sorry, outside of Montreal, but I don't like Montreal. I never liked Montreal. Yeah. Anyways, so that's my story time. And then
thank you.
I love that team. And then Alex Burrows was introduced to me. I was like, oh fuck, I hate that guy.
Vancouver's a good team. Let's see what they do over the next few weeks and months. I have faith in them again. Or at least my faith in them is restored now.
I'm just going to point out again before we go, I fully called this Vancouver Canucks turnaround. I could not be more proud of myself for calling it, because I genuinely was like, it's happening. Like, okay. I went with my gut, and right now it is currently a great look. Oh, my
should goodness. I call this episode A Tale of Three Coaches, or should I call it Simon Was Right?
Simon was right. 100%. 100%.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Yeah. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you all next week.